Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Yo, what's up? Welcome to Kind of Funny Games Daily for Tuesday, August 17th, 2021. I'm one of your hosts, Blessing Adeoye Jr. Joining me is the force that is Gary Whitta.
I haven't heard that intro in a while. It's been too long since we last hosted together, Bless.
We definitely don't host together enough. Are you drinking coffee? That is my first question.
I've got some iced coffee, yes.
Okay, is coffee usually your go-to?
Yeah, I need a little. I'm of an age where I need a little. I need a little chemical. I need something. I need some kind of boost in the morning. Don't we all?
Yeah, that's been my back and forth that I've been struggling with. Not only the last year and a half since hosting KFGD, but especially within the last couple of weeks, because I tried to go back to tea. I try to do tea in the mornings, and it just doesn't give me the same boost. But coffee almost gives me too much of a boost. So I'm trying to find a happy medium, and I've not been.
What do you got? What do you got right there? What is that from McDonald's? You're rocking.
This is McDonald's iced coffee.
Oh yeah, so I've got the iced coffee, but I've got the cream and sugar in here as well.
Did you make that iced coffee, or is that iced coffee that you got from McDonald's and poured into a glass?
I mean, it's iced coffee black that I got from the supermarket, and then I put my own cream and sugar in it.
Okay, now
how do you like your coffee usually, Blessing?
I don't have a big preference. Usually, I do go for iced coffee just because. I like the sweetness. I like the sugar. I like going. I like hitting up Starbucks and McDonald's. I like the ritual of actually driving to a place and picking up my coffee and bringing it back. But I usually won't take cream in my coffee. That's kind of my line because I am lactose intolerant. And I'm trying to take care of myself.
Okay,
I will do black with sugar in it.
Yeah, you like your coffee like you like yourself, black and sweet.
Hell yeah. There it is, Gary.
There you go. All right. Now,
Gary, this is a very special episode of KFGD, and I want to ask you, do you know why?
No. Tell me. Enlighten me.
I'm not going to tell you until we reach the end of the show, and I want people in chat to ruminate. I want you to think about it during the show. This is a very, very special episode of Kind of Funny Games Daily.
Can you give us a hint?
No. If I gave you a hint, it'd be too easy.
You got to give us something to go on. It could be anything. Is it like an anniversary episode of yours or something?
Not of mine.
Is it like a hundredth episode or something?
Keep thinking in that direction.
Can we guess?
Yeah, go for it. I'm not going to tell you if you're right or wrong.
Why? Well, then what's the point of guessing?
I'll tell you at the end if you're right or wrong. I want people to sit and think about it.
Is it special because it's something to do with you in particular?
No.
It's not okay. Yeah, is it like the 1,000th episode?
I fucking nailed it. I nailed his ass. Look at him. I nailed the shit out of him.
Oh, you ought to
see. Is it like my 100? I can't believe that you'd be tracking this though. You don't know how many.
No. There's people that track this sort of thing.
Really?
Angels out there. Oh yeah.
There are definitely some kind of funny ultras out there who are going to have those stats, right?
Ultras. 1,000%. Kenny Blue
scribbling down every statistic in that little chicken scratch writing.
You see how quickly he knew
a huge pile of notebooks.
Kenny Blue in the community is the one that used because he's written in while I've been on the show before tracking our 100 episodes.
No
so
bullshit. Everyone cheers in the crowd.
I'll tell you what the special occasion is at the end of the episode. But for now, let's talk about Sea of Thieves being super popular, Outrider sales being a mystery, and more because this is Kind of Funny Games Daily. Each and every weekday at 10 a.m. live right here on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. We run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. If you're watching live, you can correct us when we get stuff wrong by going to kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong. If you don't want to watch live, you can watch later on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames, roosterteeth.com, or you can listen later on podcast services around the globe by searching for Kind of Funny Games Daily. To be a part of the show, to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, where bronze members or above get to write in, and silver members or above get the show ad-free with the exclusive daily post show. housekeeping for you. A new PS I Love You XOXO is up right now. It's me, it's Greg, it's Janet Garcia talking all about the PlayStation game of the year so far. We discuss games like Returnal, Chicory, Ratchet and Clank, and everything, every big PlayStation release under the sun this year. That's up right now on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames and on podcast services around the globe. Tomorrow at 6 a.m. Pacific time, we got a crew waking up early to react to that Pokemon presentation going down, where we'll be talking about Pokemon Diamond and Pearl and also Pokemon Legends Arceus. And so wake up bright and early, wipe those eyes, and tune in to twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames so you can see us entirely react to that. And then this week's Gamescast is coming out on Thursday morning and will be your Ghost of Tsushima Director's Cut review, so get hyped for that. Thank you to our Patreon producer, Blackjack. Today we're brought to you by Canva, HBO Max, and KiwiCo, but I'll tell you about that later. For now, let's begin with what is and forever will be the Roper Report. It's time for some news. We have six stories today. Six stories on this very special episode of KFGD that may or may not be our 1,000th episode. Who knows? Who knows? None of us know here. None of us know.
Why wouldn't you just tell the kids?
He's, he's keeping us in suspense, Kevin. He knows how
I'll tell them at the end of the episode.
Watching until the very end.
I know you're not in suspense because, Gary, you don't handle suspense well. You freak out.
I actually handle suspense remarkably well, Kevin.
No, that's not true. I've seen you. I've seen it.
The audience is in suspense. Chat is in suspense. They have no idea what's coming. Is it the 1,000th episode?
Nobody knows what's going on.
Is this Kevin's work anniversary? We'll see at the end of the episode.
No, that's in February.
I mean, it could just be that it's special because it's the first episode where Blessing is rocking this incredible shadow bling.
Thank you. That was actually
yesterday. Very, very envious of, by the way.
I did rock this yesterday. It was me and Tim. I rocked the shadow. He rocked the Sonic. But this is the first time I'm rocking it with my my bomber jacket and the Heather Gray shirt. And let me tell you, I said this before the show, and Kevin and Roger disagreed with me. But this Shadow the Hedgehog bling makes all of my outfits 10 times better. And they cannot tell otherwise.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Thank you. Story number one of the Roper Report, Sea of Thieves is the most popular it's ever been. This is from the Sea of Thieves blog. It's been over a month since we released Sea of Thieves, A Pirate's Life, Into the Wild Blue Yonder as part of Season 3. And since that emotional launch day, we've been bowled over by the response from the Sea of Thieves community. From your reactions on social media, to your fan art, and stories of exploring the five new tall tales, it's been amazing. And all this excitement resulted in our busiest ever month on the seas, with June seeing 4.8 million active pirates out on the water. There's more to the story. I want to take a pause there and ask you, Gary, you're into Sea of Thieves, right? Like that is your kind of game.
No. In fact, the funny thing about this story is I just finally uninstalled Sea of Thieves yesterday because I finally decided that I'm just never going to play it. I'm tired of saying, oh, I'm going to play it. We're going to get around to it. I had a conversation with myself yesterday and like, Gary, who are you kidding? You're never going to play Sea of Thieves.
Gary,
it's taking up space on your hard drive. It's gone as of yesterday.
You were trying to get into it though,
more popular than ever,
but
no thanks to me.
You're trying to get into it though, but I remember you trying to seek a crew of pirates to sail the seas.
I was this close to putting together a crew with Snowbite Mike and Greg on a stream a couple of months ago, and I had some technical problems with the Xbox streaming side of it. I since cleared that up and I got it reinstalled. I actually had it installed both as a PC and an Xbox version, you know, because Game Pass Ultimate, you get all of it. And the excitement's not there. I don't know. I'm sure it's a very good game, but this is the biggest problem that we're having right now, Blessing. And it's a champagne problem for sure. But we were talking about this. Mike and I were talking about this and Barrett on the Xcast this past Friday. There's too much good stuff out there right now, Blake. There's only so many hours in the day and there are too many high quality games vying for our attention. When I sit down, I'm like, let me start a new game. I've got 7, 8, 9 absolute bangers all saying, play me, play me, play me. How do you pick one? It's a great problem to have, but it is nevertheless a problem. And my feeling was that Sea of Thieves was just not going to break through all of that and emerge as the top contender for the next game I'm going to play.
Yeah, I definitely feel that, Gary, especially now that we're in August. I've had the thing where I've been bouncing back and forth between a ton of games, and we are surprisingly here. We're in review season, where there are a bunch of different games that we have that are about to release that we're trying to get in for review. But at the same time, I want to play games like Apex because Apex is in its new season. I want to get back to GTA Online because they had the Los Santos Tuners update that I liked a lot.
Yep,
that I only got to play for about a week and a half. And then there are other games like Andres Arena Legends, which I got to play for a little bit because I was out with PS Plus. But then so many games came by and I felt like I had to kind of ping pong back and forth. And I'm at the place now where I'm very much picking and choosing. Like there's the game Dodgeball Academia that I love so much that I only got to play a bit over half of, and I want to return to that. Whereas there's just a long list, right? Blessing Superfun Games Calendar, which I update regularly, is just expanding as we go. But coming back to Sea of Thieves, for 4.8 million players, right? Like how does that sit with you? Are you at all surprised with your experience with Sea of Thieves? Are you surprised that the game is as popular as it is and seemingly getting more popular as they're releasing these new updates?
I think a little bit, because beyond all of the marketing and the, you know, Microsoft always tries to make a lot of noise around Sea of Thieves. This kind of Jack Sparrow update they did obviously got a lot of eyes on it, and they're constantly pushing it. New updates are always, you know, there's a lot of marketing publicity efforts that Microsoft put into it. Beyond that, but again, you know, it's because I'm not in that world. I don't see a lot of organic conversation about Sea of Thieves. It doesn't. It's not like a game that seems like it's in the zeitgeist, in the conversation a lot. But that doesn't mean that people aren't playing it. It's a sleeper hit, right? It's a game that a lot of people are playing. But I feel like unless you're actually in that community, in that world, it's not necessarily a game that you're going to hear a lot about. But that's fine. Microsoft looking at these numbers, and we don't care if, you know, people aren't, you know, talking about it everywhere. As long as people are playing it and in those communities, I'm sure there is a lot of conversation. It's just not when I'm scrolling through Twitter or looking at game news or whatever, Sea of Thieves is not popping off all the time.
Yeah, I want to get back into this article because I paused early because I wanted to talk about the numbers, but they still have a lot more to say. So they continue. Of course, the Sea of Thieves team have also been listening to your feedback and working hard to improve and balance the gameplay throughout the new Tall Tales. With a string of downloadable hotfixes released since Season 3's launch, and our August update continues to make improvements across the board. Our player support has been invaluable in helping us determine what to focus on as we continue to fine-tune the whole Sea of Thieves experience. If you're fully invested in living the pirate life after journeying with Jack Sparrow, a whole world of adventure awaits. And there are so many places to go. Here are just a few of the exciting things that you can keep in mind for your next sail. 11 previously established tall tales that see you exploring not only the islands within the Devil's Shroud, but beyond, journeying through history and legend to find out more about the colorful characters that call the Sea of Thieves their home. New seasonal trials introduced in each season, with Season 3's selection encouraging exploration of those earlier tall tales. Check them out to boost your seasonal progression and unlock rewards on the way to level 100. Engaging world events that affect Sea of Thieves' shared world, like battles with the spectral armada of Captain Flameheart or the appearances of challenging Ashen Lords. Skeleton forts filled with skeletons to conquer and treasure to plunder, from the haunted fort of the damned to loot-laden forts of fortune. Trading company voyages, including all the new additions from the last year of free content updates, from sunken plunder waiting to be recovered, from the merchant alliances lost shipments to the gold hoarders, treasure vault voyages that give you a golden wayfinder compass and send you off in search of a big score, and then tales of legendary pirates and achievements inspired by real players, all of which can be uncovered by tracking down Umbra's legends of the sea. And Gary, we talk about how Sea of Thieves is very much a game that is geared toward the fans of that game, right? Like for us who aren't as tuned into it, right? Like I read all of that and I was like, I understood some of those words. Most of those words,
I was
going to
say, I barely understood a word of that. Yeah, I don't play Sea of Thieves.
But like, I think that is the telltale sign of, oh, they have a community that they're speaking to that are reading through this and are probably getting excited about each of these things to some extent, right? Like it's super awesome that when I jumped into Sea of Thieves at its launch, I played it for a little bit and immediately fell off because I felt like the content wasn't there. I wasn't interested in the flow of the game. I wasn't interested in the actual gameplay mechanics. I completely wasn't into it. But it seems like over the years, the game has evolved and not necessarily changed. Like, I don't think they've changed their roadmap or changed their vision for the game. I think it's the thing of them fulfilling that vision and creating a game that is really speaking to what they want the Sea of Thieves experience to be. And Kevin, I know that you jumped into Sea of Thieves. Like, for you, are you still in it? Are you still playing? And are you excited to jump back in at some point?
Oh, no, not at all. I mean, I would be down to jump back in, but, like, I played it, like, twice on stream. I had a lot of fun. Turns out, Gary, I'm a natural-born captain.
Are you? You know?
Yeah, we picked Greg.
A born leader?
I was going to say, I never watched the streams. Was Greg not the captain of those streams?
He was originally, like, but let me tell you, that man can helm a ship. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. He just doesn't have the gusto to pre-plan and be like, no, no, no. Drop what you're doing, Michael. Go down there and fix the holes.
Mm. Did you consider mutinying? Because I would watch that content.
In a lot of ways, I did. I stood next to him and I told him this wasn't his place. And he stood down and then worked the sails. He worked the sails very well. A good salesman. A great seaman, if you would.
He's a natural leader. In real life, right? He's taken kind of funny to these Eddie Heights.
Put him on a
Eddie
boat,
Heights.
He loses all his powers.
Why do those leadership qualities not translate onto
ahead.
A pirate ship?
You got to be thinking, when am I going to drop this anchor? Do I have someone ready to open the sails? There's just a lot of planning.
Kevin is a very practical person. When it comes to things like that, of like how to make a big ship move, that is something that Kevin will figure out and I think will be very practical about in a way that Greg Miller, his leadership ability comes from his charisma. He's able to inspire people. He's able to be a personality.
Some sails open.
Exactly. You can't charisma a boat. A boat doesn't even fuck about what you have to say.
I don't know. I think like when you're a pirate, having charisma is part of the package, right?
Yeah, but like as a captain, I think you have to know. Kevin makes a good point that Kevin knows the mechanics, whereas Greg, I think, might be able to be like the co-captain and be like the person that people look to for inspiration. But Kevin's the person that gets things done, right? Like Kevin actually knows what's happening. Kevin's doing the work behind the scenes. He's the guy that's pushing the ones.
I can see that. Yeah, he's the guy that actually keeps the trains running on time. No, I get it.
Kevin, did you ever tell Greg that you are the captain now? Like, did you ever look him in the eye and be like, "No, I am the captain"?
I dramatically walked up to him and I was like, "You're a captain no more. Move aside."
Good for you.
Getting back to your point though, Blessing, like you said, when you were listing that very, very impressive list of content updates and new features, you sounded like the teacher from Peanuts to me. Wah, wah, wah. I didn't understand a word of it. Because I don't play Sea of Thieves. I'm sure people who do play Sea of Thieves are like frothing at the mouth of all this content because they understand what it means. You and I don't. But in a general sense, what I think it is doing is illustrating the problem and also the opportunity with these service games, which is you got to keep the content coming, right? The people, these players are hungry for it, whether it's Destiny or Warcraft or Avengers or Sea of Thieves or any one of these ongoing games where you got to keep dropping the content. It's a never-ending battle to keep these very content-hungry players sated, right? They're always looking for like the next thing. They burn through the content that you drop super, super fast and like, okay, what's next? And it's also kind of a weird self-fulfilling prophecy. Like when you've got a game, for example, that's struggling a little bit, like Avengers, right? It can be hard to justify putting the resources into the next big content drop that might, like the Wakanda thing, right? It could turn that game around, or it could just be throwing, good money after bad because, the player base is already largely abandoned it. With Sea of Thieves, it's a little bit easier because you've got a very, very big player base, right? And so the incentive is there to keep, so you want to keep them engaged. And so the incentive is there to keep, providing the content. We've only got like 500 people playing your game. It's like, man, I'm busting my ass for a game for this update that virtually no one's going to play. And it's probably not going to turn this doomed ship around. But when you've got a very healthy game like Sea of Thieves clearly is based on these numbers, I think it's probably a happier time at Rare for them to be developing that new content. And just success breeds success, just like failure breeds failure. So this is an interesting thing with these service games. It's not just in what kind of shape is the game at launch. It's like what kind of shape can we keep the game in on an ongoing basis, where it's this constant race to keep providing content for players who always want the next experience.
Exactly. And I want to mention two things to grant even some more context to these numbers, right? Like, it's important to point out that this game being an Xbox first party game, it is on Game Pass, which is very important and very critical to how Sea of Thieves is performing and the success of Sea of Thieves. Sea of Thieves is the perfect Game Pass game. The fact that anybody who has Xbox Game Pass can boot up their console or boot up their PC and go, all right, yeah, I'll try this game out and then possibly fall in love with it, like somebody like Kevin or Greg, right down the line. I think that is very special for it. But then also, is impressive that this is a game that is only available on Xbox and PC, right? Like, this isn't on the PlayStation, which is the most popular platform. This is on Switch, which is the fastest selling platform right now. This is on Xbox and PC, and it's doing these kinds of numbers while being on just those platforms, which, you know, I think is impressive even with Game Pass. And so
and this is what I mean about the game being strangely kind of low key in its profile, right? Anytime you get into a conversation with someone about what are the exclusives on Xbox, and you go, well, you know, of course Halo and Forza and Gears of War and you name these things, but it's not, Sea of Thieves doesn't like jump into my head as like, oh, that's a great Xbox exclusive. But it is, right? You can see it's hugely popular. People really, really like it. It's got a massive community. They're doing a great job supporting it. There's nothing else like it out there on any platform. And it's a Game Pass exclusive. So, you know, it's definitely part of Microsoft's portfolio of things when they say, hey, come to Xbox and you can play these games you can't get anyplace else. Sea of Thieves is one of them. We just, for some reason, we don't think of it on that level. It's just mm-hmm. kind of chugging away, keeping its fan base very happy, but it's not something that I feel like is constantly breaking through into the broader conversation. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. Now, speaking of Xbox Game Pass, story number two, People Can Fly, the Outriders developers, don't know how much Outriders sold. This is from Joe Screbbles at IGN. Outriders developer People Can Fly says it doesn't know how many copies of the game has sold and hasn't earned any royalties from the game, suggesting it hasn't yet been profitable for publisher Square Enix. Announced on the developer's investors website, People Can Fly explained that the agreement with Square Enix meant it would receive any royalties for the game's first quarter on sale by August 16th, 2021. No funds were transferred, which People Can Fly suggests means that, quote, according to the publisher, the revenues from the sale of the game are lower than the total costs of its production, distribution, and promotion, end quote. People Can Fly executive Sebastian Wojciechowski added that the company had no firm data for the copies sold. Quote, we don't have any sales figures for Outriders. We estimate it at between 2 and 3 million units and assume that this was a result that would ensure profitability for this project in the first quarter of sales. The lack of payment by the publisher probably means that, according to Square Enix, this is not the case, end quote. Wojciechowski also suggests that the lack of profitability could be caused by the publisher, including distribution partnerships, the game was launched into Xbox Game Pass, for example, or that Square Enix spent more than expected on releasing the game. It wouldn't be a unique situation for Square Enix. Last year, the publisher announced that Marvel's Avengers had failed to recoup its development costs a few months after launch. Wojciechowski added that the game was still being worked on. People Can Fly expects more promotional work from Square Enix and that, quote, the sales tale of the Outriders game is ahead of us, end quote. As a result, the company expects royalties to begin later this year. Gary, is it surprising to you that the Outriders may not have already been recouping its cost of development?
Well, on the face of it, it's not that surprising because we're not seeing any evidence that the game beyond, an initial flurry of excitement right around the launch window, which almost every big game has regardless, right? There's always a week when everyone's at least trying it out. Everyone on Twitch is like checking it out. People are playing it. I remember a lot of my streamer friends were playing it for a couple of weeks. I know the kind of funny people were really, really into it for a couple of weeks. But then like the big question, of course, is it sticky? Does it stick around beyond that initial couple of weeks? Like, are you going to keep playing it? And we're not seeing a lot of evidence that, right? Who's talking about Outriders, you know, right now? I don't see any, I don't see that in the conversation at all right now. And even though, you know, the numbers are often opaque, right? It's not, unless they choose to release the numbers, and if they're bad, they probably won't. There's no way to know how many people are playing on Xbox or PlayStation or whatever right now. But you can go on PC and you can see exactly how many, people are playing on Steam at any given time. And oftentimes you can see the number. That's how we know that Avengers wasn't doing well, because you could go and look at the Steam metrics and say, oh shit, like only like 53 people in the world are playing this game right now. That's a made up number, but it was in that ballpark. Mm-hmm. It's like, man, that's not a good indicator. And I think that Outriders has been struggling in a similar way. Now, beyond that, I don't want to sound cynical, but one of the things I know from my business in Hollywood is that just because they're not paying out royalties doesn't necessarily mean the product was not successful. I'm sure you know a very familiar story, very famous story about Peter Jackson having to sue New Line Cinema over The Lord of the Rings, because even though everyone on the planet who had eyes and ears could tell that The Lord of the Rings movies were phenomenally successful and made huge amounts of money. New Line were able to present basically a set of cooked books to Peter Jackson, saying, "Ah, but we didn't really make any money, so that profit sharing agreement, we said you don't really get any of that money." Because, you know, they basically made it look like they hadn't made any money. Peter Jackson took him to court over it because he knew it was bullshit. So, you know, cooking the books and trying to find ways to kind of massage the numbers so you don't have to pay out the people you entered into profit-sharing agreements with, that's not uncommon. But at the same time, Outlaws ain't no Lord of the Rings, right? We know it's not doing super successful. And if it were, they'd be shouting about it. And if it were, we'd see many more people playing it. Just anecdotally, our friends would be playing it. You'd be hearing about it on social media. There'd be articles about it all the time. But it's just, you know, after that initial two-week flurry of excitement, it just kind of went away. So, you know, I think Occam's Razor probably applies here. You know, all things being equal, the simplest explanation is probably the right one. My guess is that it's not making a lot of money. And so it hasn't met whatever threshold for Square to pay out the developers.
Yeah, I would love to have seen their predictions in terms of what they expected Outriders to do long term, because you mentioned them, you know, not shouting out like, hey, you know, Outriders is selling like crazy. This game is super successful. At its launch, I remember them talking about the numbers. I remember Outriders being a thing for those 2 weeks where it was popping, where right after they released the demo, if you remember, they did the demo that people could download for free, and that progress and transfer into the full game. They talked about how that demo was downloaded a certain number of times, a very impressive number of times. And during the first few weeks of Outriders, I remember them talking about, hey, like, this is killing it. I wonder if they thought long-term those sales would continue. And I wouldn't be surprised if, yeah, in those 2 weeks, sales were above expectation, but then past those 2 weeks, they dived way more than expected. Because, yeah, like, conversation around it disappeared, and Outriders is very much not a live service game. That was a one-and-done gear loot game that is a full price video game. And I think what we see a lot with Xbox Game Pass is, with Xbox Game Pass, for many developers, is that surprise thing of, oh, this is actually helping us with sales because it's getting word out there. So people that do have PlayStation or other platforms or don't have Xbox Game Pass end up buying it anyway. I wonder with Outriders if it's a different thing, because with Outriders, that is a full price game that is harder to convince people, especially if it's not a banger, right? Like, Outriders was a good game. It wasn't an amazing game for people. So I wonder if the Xbox Game Pass, if that thing didn't work for it.
I mean, I don't know. I would have thought that putting it on Game Pass or putting it on PlayStation Plus, giving people an opportunity to try, you know, to try at, you know, essentially no risk because it's already baked into the cost of that subscription, is a great way to get people to sample it. But again, getting people to sample it is one thing. Like, I talked about that two-week window where a lot of people were playing it. But if it doesn't stick around, if it doesn't keep you coming back, that initial two-week engagement is not going to count for very much. These service games need to stick around long-term. And for every Sea of Thieves, which has, you know, nearly 5 million players, you know, years after its launch, there's something like an Outriders, which burns very brightly at launch. If you remember, Blessing, the media narrative
wasn't a game of service, right?
Well, they said that, but it's but look, we you can call it what you want, but we all know it's one of those games that's going to require regular content updates to keep people interested, right?
It's not a game that
wasn't intended to be a game that you finish and then move on from. I don't think they want to keep.
But they didn't make any, like, because there was no roadmap, so there was going to be no, like, there was no reason to keep. Yeah, grinding,
maybe they should have had a fucking roadmap. Maybe 100%. That's the problem.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest issue.
And because I remember the narrative around it, and the media narrative is not the be all and end all, but like, you just looking at websites, looking at social media, looking at how many people are streaming it on Twitch. There are a ton of people streaming it on Twitch. I bet if you go right now and look, there's almost no one streaming it. And that's always a good, you know, that's become quite a good barometer. How many people are watching the game on Twitch? How many streamers are choosing to play it for their audience? Not very many, I would wager. But for those first 2 weeks, there was a really positive, because it came out of nowhere, right? It's not a big franchise game. It's an original property. People didn't really see it coming. And it did make a bit of a splash when it landed. People liked it. And they thought, you know, here's one of these kind of games that actually gets a lot of things right. That was the kind of the vibe I was getting from the media and the player reaction to it. But then it started to turn, right? Broken, you know, weapons were broken. The player base wasn't thrilled with bug. You know, they rolled out bug fixes that actually made things work as I and made things worse, as I recall. And just people started to sour on it really quickly. And once that perception starts to change, it's really hard to win people back. You know, not every game can do that No Man's Sky redemption narrative, right? Most games don't. You only get one chance to make a first impression, and they made a very good first impression, but they didn't sustain it beyond that. And like I said, the problem right now is the landscape is so competitive. It's not like the old days, right? When you were 10 years old and you brought home one NES game that you'd saved up for, or you'd rented an NES game for the weekend and it was shitty, but it was the one cartridge you had. So like, you'd better try and enjoy it, right? And that's why we tortured ourselves when we were kids playing shitty games, because we didn't have a lot of choice. Now, in the age of Game Pass and PlayStation Plus and Steam and games on demand, and there's so many great games out there right now, we don't have to tolerate shitty games. Go play something else that's better. And so you've got to make an impact. You've really got to put your best foot forward and impress players and do everything you can to keep them playing your games, because there's just too many other options out there. I check out games on Game Pass all the time. And if it doesn't stay, if I'm playing it for like half an hour, an hour, and I'm not feeling it, I'll just move on to something else. Life's too short. Time is the one commodity you can never get back. So wasting my time is like the one unforgivable thing in a video game. You get one chance, and then if you blow it, I'm on to the next game.
Gary, let's talk about story number three. Fortnite's new mode is basically Among Us. This is from Shem Gartenberg at The Verge. Fortnite Imposters is a new limited time game mode that's rolling out today, one that might sound a bit familiar to anyone who's played Among Us. Imposters puts players into two teams. One team with up to 8 agents has a goal of maintaining the headquarters of one of Fortnite's secretive factions, the Imagined Order, by accomplishing various tasks. The other team of 2 imposters, Epic apparently couldn't be bothered to change the name, whose goal is to take out all the agents. At any point, if players find an eliminated player or see something too suspicious, they can call a meeting where players can discuss the events of the game and vote off someone if they choose. The Fortnite version also cleverly uses the game's iconic emote to help the discussion, so you can literally point a finger at players who you suspect. In other words, it's a Fortnite version of Among Us, with the serial numbers slightly filed off. There are a few differences. Of course, everything has been decked out in a Fortnite-themed veneer, with tasks like fixing the battle bus or preparing llama supply drops. Imposters don't kill players, but teleport them away into a rift. At any point, if players find an eliminated player or see something too suspicious, they can call a meeting where players can discuss the events of the game and vote off someone if they choose. The Fortnite version also cleverly uses the game's iconic it looks like I copied and pasted that twice. But yeah, basically there's a Fortnite Among Us mode. Is what this is getting at. I think we talked about something similarly at the end of last year, because I think there was a fan-made mode, like a creative mode that people put out that Fortnite promoted, but this seems like it's a proper Fortnite developed Among Us like mode. Gary, does that interest you? I know you like Among Us.
I do like Among Us. I've never played Fortnite. It's not for me. Couldn't care less about Fortnite. I do think just as a neutral observer, I do find this a bit depressing, but not surprising. It's disappointing, but it's not surprising. Don't forget, this is the whole reason why Fortnite is where it is today, is plagiarizing other games. We all remember when Fortnite first came out in its original iteration, when I think it was called like Fortnite Save the World or something like that.
That's right.
It was dead game. It was DOA. No, I mean, I played it a little bit. No one's playing this. It was dead. And then, but that was exactly around the same time that PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds was first popping off. And someone at Epic looked at it and went, "Oh, well, maybe we should do that. Let's copy that. Let's do a battle royale." And of course, the rest is history. And now they're doing it all over again with Among Us. And it's a bit depressing, because the whole thing that we saw last year with Epic kind of fighting Apple as though they were like somehow the champions of the little guy is ridiculous. Epic's not the little guy. Epic's one of those big guys now, right? Mm-hmm. They've got more money than God. What are the 4 people at Innersloth gonna do? Sue them? They want to take on Epic's lawyers who are already taking on Apple? No, it's not going to happen. It's a bit, we see companies, these big companies do it all the time, like Microsoft or whatever, will just go, "Oh, that's a good idea, little developer. We'll just fucking steal that. And good luck, see you in court. Our lawyers are better than yours." So it's a bit depressing. I don't have a lot to say about it other than I just, I find this kind of thing just a little bit unpalatable, where, a small team like Innersloth, had one of the few true mega indie organic breakout hits, right? And it's interesting, right? Because Among Us was kind of a dead game on arrival. Among Us came out in 2018. Oh, yeah. People weren't playing it, but it had, but it actually had an organic explosion of growth where some streamers started playing it, and people started to cotton on to, oh, this is actually a really cool game. And next thing you know, it's hugely, hugely popular. But that was a that was the Inner Sloth is like the little team that could, and they've gone on to have tremendous success with that game. Yes, you can make the argument that Among Us is, you know, a copy of like Werewolf and Mafia and other imposter type games that are out there, but they put their own spin on it. They made it their own. It was a little plucky team of a handful of developers who have gone on to have tremendous success. And so it was perhaps inevitable that one of these like mega, you know, game companies was going to do this. And I think like Fortnite will probably continue to do it. I wouldn't be in at all surprised if part of their official kind of roadmap business model going forward is, yeah, we'll do the Ariana Grande concerts. Yeah, we'll basically become the Funko Pops of video game. We'll let every single pop culture icon that emerges. We'll put Superman in the game. We'll put Rick and Morty in the game, regardless of whether or not it makes any sense, or if it's incongruous, or if it's just weird. We'll just back. You know, Fortnite's just going to become this like weird Ready Player One now, right? Where just all these different pop culture icons are all like smashing into each other for no narratively coherent reason at all. But it makes lots of money, so who cares? Right on the Epic side. But I think that part of the plan as well is like, we'll just sit around waiting in the tall grass for like any time like an Inner Sloth or, you know, Mediatonic comes along with a Fall Guys or an Among Us or like has a breakthrough concept. We'll just rip it off, slap it into Fortnite, give ourselves a content refresh, and, you know, keep making money. It's a very depressing, extremely cynical business model, but it's now baked into the Fortnite formula.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I go kind of back and forth on it, because I think for me, when it comes to big trends in video games, I think so many people tend to try and adapt and try to find ways to hop on whatever is hot. And so like PUBG came out and so many games did the battle royale thing, right? Like the Apex had a ping system. So many games adapted that afterwards. And I think there's definitely a spectrum in terms of being inspired, trying to hop on a trend, and then like the one for one thing. And this is very much, I think this falls in line with, hey, this is kind of one for one for Among Us, which I do think is unfortunate. I do like the idea of Fortnite and other games trying to have some kind of murder mystery mode or like deductive mystery mode, because I love that, right? That's why I love Among Us. I loved the multiplayer deductive true who's the killer kind of thing. That is Among Us has provided me so many hours of fun for that, and I'd like to play other games that are like that. That's why I got so into Clue this last year. But I personally, for Fortnite, would have preferred them to try and make it their own thing, or try to find a unique way to do it, as opposed to doing a, hey, we're literally calling it Imposters. It's literally going to be 8v2. It is legitimately going to have the same format as Among Us. I think that's where it gets a bit egregious.
Yeah, and Epic can do that and completely brazenly, because they're the biggest kid on the schoolyard, right? Who's going to step up to them? And again, it's not like Fortnite are unique at doing this. After Among Us blew up, you can go onto Steam right now and find a dozen Among Us clones, right? Everyone's like, oh, let's jump onto that bandwagon. Look at what happened after, you know, PUBG wasn't even the first game to do Battle Royale. There was like H1Z1 and mods for Armor 3 and things like that, where that idea actually originated. But now, look how many, you know, people have now, you know, also jumped onto the Battle Royale train. Obviously, Warzone. And at least what I love about that trend is that game companies have found ways to apply the Battle Royale concept in interesting ways. Like Fall Guys is a Battle Royale, Tetris 99, Super Mario 35, and on it goes. That's actually turned out to be that elimination tournament format has turned out to be applicable to all kinds of different game genres, and that's great. And so this kind of like, oh, you know, someone breaks through with a cool idea. Next thing you know, everyone's copying it. It's nothing new. We've seen it in Hollywood. See it in all different art forms. We see it in video games. The reason why it's a little bit egregious, I think, when Fortnite does it is because when another company copies someone else's idea, it still kind of sinks or swims on its own merits. But when someone as big as Fortnite does it, it's guaranteed to be big, right? Because it's coming off the back of a platform as huge as Fortnite. And the real danger is if it actually starts big, though.
Like, wait, what? I don't think this is going to be popular. This is the limited time modes. Like, they don't last very long. They're poorly constructed. Like, they're not usually fun. This totally makes sense with like the story narrative that they've been building for the whole season about there being aliens infiltrating stuff. Like, we've had multiple missions in Fortnite where you have to run around, talk to people, and kind of figure out if they're aliens. So This is just a like gimmick. Like this isn't them trying to do a like a, when they you know like did the battle royale for Fortnite. Like this is just a somebody saw an opportunity with the story they've been building for them to be like, oh, it'll be fun to introduce this like story mode or game mode. But like this is not something that's going to stick around. This is not something big. Like they wouldn't do it this way, right?
Yeah, but, because three. Yeah, of course, because 6 months from now they're going to have the next thing to do, right? There'll be another game.
No. I'm talking
copy.
A week from now. This is gone. Like this oh, yeah? isn't. Yeah, the limited time modes do not stay very long, and this does. Like they're like you're talking. I like I don't.
What if it
I,
were
like,
hugely popular
Fortnite?
Though? Don't you think they would? Don't you think they would change that?
Yeah, but it's. I mean, I guarantee. Yeah, if it was enormously popular, I guarantee that they would keep it longer. But I can also guarantee that it's not going to be popular. And it's not gonna be Among Us.
Listen,
like it's gonna be their like you know take on it, and it's not gonna stick around for very long.
Yeah, and the weird thing about it is when you do it in this kind of reactionary way, when you copy trends rather than set trends, mm-hmm. you're always a little bit behind the eight ball. Like Among Us, you could make again. I don't know what the metrics are, but again, at least in terms of like the zeitgeist, what are we talking about these days in video gaming? Like Among Us. Is already kind of like declining. Like there was like 3-6 months ago, everyone was talking about Among Us. Among Us was like the hottest game out there. Now we've kind of moved on to other things, and Among Us is still very popular, but it's not like the spotlight's not on it to anything. Like it's already kind of waning a little bit. And so by the time you get to bring your clone version of it to market, people are like, eh. Really? Isn't that like yesterday's news, imposters and tasks and shit? And so this is why it's always better to try and come up with your own original ideas and set trends rather than chase them. I know I always come across as like the old man shaking his fist at a cloud when I talk about Fortnite. You know, I'm not a fan of it, but yeah. but I'm also not 14 years old, so it's not, you know, it's not for me.
But Fortnite also isn't the it game anymore, right? Like it,
I mean,
it's
it depends on you define like, it. It's still super popular, like
sure,
super,
super
popular.
But I think that the 14-year-olds are playing different games now. I don't know. Last time I talked to like a teenager, they were like, "Oh, Fortnite's dumb," and I was like, "Cool, whatever, get the fuck out of my game."
Well, what are they playing?
Huh? I don't know. I didn't ask him any questions.
Fair enough,
kid. You know what I mean? Like I was not trying to have a conversation.
Fair
and
enough.
Listen, I'll just say one. I said it already earlier, but I'll say it again. I'm fully aware of the fact that even among again, PUBG wasn't the first to have the battle royale idea. It took it from Arma 3 and H1Z1. Among Us wasn't the first game to have this idea. It took it from Werewolf and Mafia, and you know they probably found it from somewhere else as well. Like there's almost no such thing as an original idea. The question is how much of your own spin, how much of your own personality can you put on it to make it feel fresh, to kind of keep it interesting, so it doesn't just look like a straight up clone. Again, the fact that this Fortnite version does seem to crib so directly from again, they don't care. Again, because who's going to challenge them? Who's going to stop them? They are the biggest kid in the schoolyard, and no one's going to challenge them.
The big thing, this isn't them releasing a new game. This is like small.
It's an event, right? Like it's an event happening,
right?
I don't think you can put Fortnite there. And small in the same sentence, though. Everything Fortnite
no,
does is
no,
by
you
definition
can, though,
huge.
In the sense that like. It's not like this isn't a new leg that they've put out. Like this is just a gimmick that they're putting out there as an option for people to go in and try this different mode, and then it'll go away. Like no modes, even good modes that people like, don't stick around.
Yeah, I remember having a similar conversation about some other limited time mode that was a copy of some other whatever else was popular at the time.
I think it was this exact conversation because this.
Yeah, we'll be back. Yeah, we'll be back. Yeah, and the time is a flat circle. We'll be back here again in 6 months talking about this happening again.
So I want to take a break so I can remind the audience that you can go to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames where you can get the show ad free. And speaking of ads, let us tell you about our sponsors.
This episode of Kinda Funny Games Daily is brought to you by Canva Pro. Making content is an essential part of what I do to keep this show going, but it hasn't always been a seamless creative process. Of course, I just get to come on here and yell at you, but somebody's got to make graphics, lower thirds, little things that pop up and go whoopity whoop whoop. Raj is making stuff right now. Make it go, Raj. Whoopity whoop whoop. How does Raj know how to do that? How does Tim know how to do that? They use Canva Pro. Of course, Canva Pro is a design platform that empowers you to create and share stunning content in just a few clicks. Whether you're a design professional or just getting started, designing with Canva Pro is amazingly fast and fun. Choose from thousands of professionally made templates that are easy to customize with simple drag and drop features or start from scratch. Canva Pro comes with endless premium fonts, photos, videos, and so much more that Add personality and edge to whatever you're designing. Design like a pro with Canva Pro. Right now, you can get a free 45-day extended trial when you use our promo code. Just go to canva.me/KFGD and get your free 45-day extended trial. That's canva.me/KFGD. Canva.me/KFGD. Our next sponsor? Well, it's HBO Max. This episode of Kinda Funny Games Daily is sponsored by HBO Max. Many of us are plumbing the depths of streaming platforms, searching for something new to watch, looking for an entertainment fix. And if that's true for you, boy, do I have a suggestion. HBO Max has same-day movie premieres of the biggest movies of 2021 every single month. Yeah, that's right. The biggest Warner Brothers Pictures releases will be available in your theater and your living room same day. Of course, we just lived through Suicide Squad, right? James Gunn, The Suicide Squad. You know what? A bunch of people went and saw it in theaters. I stayed home with Jen. We watched it here on HBO Max. We had a great time. Suicide Squad and so many others will be available, are available, whatever you want to say, in theaters and on HBO Max for a limited time and at no extra charge to subscribers. Release dates, of course, are subject to change. So get on it and sign up for HBO Max at hbom.ax/KFGD. Again, that is hbom.ax/KFGD. Our next sponsor, it's KiwiCo. KiwiCo is defining the future of play by making it engaging, enriching, and seriously fun. Super cool hands-on projects and toys designed to expose kids to concepts in STEAM, that's science, technology, engineering, art, and math, are a great resource for learning at home. And you might say, hey, Greg Miller, aren't you about to have a kid? That's right, person. That's why I have my first KiwiCo crate right here. It's the Panda Crate, which, of course, as you can see right here, maybe you can't, says ages zero. to zero plus months. So as you open it up and you see, bam, look, today I'm 1 month old. When you see this on my Instagram, my child, this pillow with the month card in there, you, not only will you know how many months old my child is, you'll know KiwiCo. KiwiCo wants kids to be fearless innovators and design projects to help them develop that muscle. If you want to sign up for KiwiCo, it is simple. You can do it and support us. You can go to kiwico.com/kindoffunnygames to get 50% off your first month. That's kiwico.com/kindoffunnygames to get 50% off your first month. KIWICO.com/kindoffunnygames to get 50% off your first month. Let me swaddle you.
Report that we're going to run through. Story number four, Xbox Series X is getting a higher resolution dashboard. This is from Tom Warren at The Verge. Microsoft is starting to test a new higher resolution dashboard for the Xbox Series X today. Xbox insiders in the Alpha and Alpha Skip Ahead rings will get access to the increased resolution for the Xbox dashboard later today, designed to improve UI elements for 4K displays. Quote, this change means home, guide, and other areas of the UI will be displayed in a higher native resolution for increased sharpness and text readability, says Microsoft's Xbox testing team. Until this new dashboard, Xbox Series X consoles had been running dashboard UI elements at 1080p. Native elements for home, guide, and other parts of the dashboard will greatly improve how the Xbox Series X appears on 4K TVs. While Microsoft mentions a, quote, higher native resolution for certain elements, it doesn't appear that the entire dashboard is in 4K yet. Gary, was this ever a thing that you noticed? Did you ever take notice that the dashboard was in 1080p and not 4K?
Yeah, actually, I remember when the Series X first rolled out, talking to someone at Microsoft about that, you know, because 4K obviously is one of the big buzzwords in this new generation of gaming. And, you know, 4K, it's like slapped all over the Series Xbox, just like it slapped all over. Actually, I think doesn't the PS5 say 8K? Come on.
It does say 8K.
We can all smell bullshit.
We're in the future, Gary.
Yeah. Maybe one day. But yeah, like 4K, 4K, 4K. But then like the actual, like the front end, like the actual main user interface, isn't it 4K? I guess not the biggest deal in the world, but I was just curious as to why. I remember asking someone at Microsoft about it and they were like, oh, you know, technical things. And there was some reason why they weren't able to do it out of the box. But it's a nice little feature that they're adding now. I was curious enough about it that I actually poked around a little bit yesterday with the Insider Hub. Basically, there's a little app you can download from the store that will grant you access to like some of these beta features. In the end, I didn't do it because, you know, they do warn you. There's a little bit of instability, like, you know, you might see some, again, because it's beta, you might see some technical issues with your Xbox if you're, you know, previewing beta software. So I decided, you know, it's an interface. It's not the biggest thing in the world. So I'll happily wait for it to kind of get tested and rolled out to people everywhere. But no, it's not super sexy, but you know, it's nice, right? You know, you've got a 4K TV, you've got a 4K console. You want to see that extra crispness, that extra sharpness, and text. Some of the, you know, the things like text, the kind of things that you see a lot of in, you know, a UI front end. You'll appreciate it. I'm sure you'll be able to know the difference. It'll be a cool thing. The other, I don't know if you touched on it, but if that article was the Tom Warren article from the Verge, yeah, that you were reading from, they also touched on the fact that technically even this Series S could deliver this 4K dashboard as well. It doesn't do 4K gaming, but it could actually also support a 4K dashboard. So, you know, it's not going to set the world on fire, this news, but it's a nice little thing. And I think, you know, demonstrates that, you know, they're continuing to, you know, do a better job than Sony currently of continuing to kind of improve the user experience from the, you know, from the front end.
Now, I want to give a shout out to Shady Marino in chat that says, call me when the 4K blades are back. And it's funny, like playing Xbox 360 backwards compatible games, when you bring up the 360 UI menu, it's funny because I swear that thing is in 720p and it sticks out like a sore thumb. And I would love them to somehow bring that up to 4K, because I think that could look sexy, but that'll probably require actually a lot of work because that was not made. I don't think that was made to be ever displayed in 4K, but you know, hey, Xbox, you guys are doing all you guys can with improving your games, so why not? You know, why not? And speaking of Xbox, story number 5, 10 more games are getting Xbox Touch controls. I'm pulling directly from Nibel on Twitter, who lists out the games. The games are Hades, Bloodroots, Farming Simulator 19, Going Under, Need for Speed Heat, Peggle 2, Psychonauts 2, Wasteland 2, 3, and Wasteland Remastered. Gary, does that excite you? Are you into the touch controls for the Xbox games?
No, and I've mentioned a couple of times that it's not for me. I've tried it. I don't like, there's two things about touch controls that I don't like. One is the controls, you know, because they have to lay like the little kind of control silhouettes over the screen, like, you know, the virtual buttons and the virtual thumbsticks. I don't like that. And I don't love my, you know, my thumbs physically obscuring the screen. And I miss the actual tactile sense of pressing a button. I think something gets lost in translation. It's just not as good. Although I did notice that Phil Spencer put out a tweet the other day talking about Hades with touch controls and recommending that as like a potential, like a good illustration of where touch controls can work really well. And from what I know about Hades and the way the control mechanisms work, I can kind of see that. I think for some games it works better than others, but I have tried the Xbox touch controls. I'm not a huge fan. Maybe I need to experiment it with a little bit more, but like, I would much rather just use a Razer Kishi or a Backbone or one of those little clips that lets me plug, you know, just add a regular Bluetooth controller and play with real tactile buttons. It's really nice to have the option for people that don't have that or don't want to carry around that additional hardware and just want to play on their phone with nothing clamped onto it. But I can't believe it's anyone's first choice for how they would want to play a game like that.
Now, our last news story, story number 6, is a fun one. Of course, Kind of Funny has been engulfed with Metal Gear Solid hype as we've been playing through on our streams the Metal Gear Solid series with Snowmike Mike and the one and only Barrett Courtney. And with that, right, it's fun that story number 6 is about a first-time Metal Gear Solid streamer who accidentally discovered a bug that got speedrunners very excited. I'm pulling from Chris Scullion at Video Games Chronicle, and I got a video that, Kevin, if you can wait, I'll read through the article and then we can watch the video because the video does have sound. But the article reads like this. Twitch streamer and Yogg's cast member Boba was playing through the original PlayStation Metal Gear Solid for the first time when she was shot by a guard and somehow ended up passing through a door that's normally locked. Unsure of what had happened, Boba was informed by her viewers that she had just skipped a chunk of the game. News of Boba's discovery quickly spread throughout the game's speedrunning community, who confirmed that it was a new glitch that had never been discovered. According to the game speedrunners, this new glitch can cut speedrun times by around 2.5 minutes because it cuts out a sizable portion of gameplay that's needed to make Snake reach the next section.
Help.
While Boba wasn't sure how the glitch triggered, speedrunners took to Discord and Reddit to try to figure out, and eventually realized that is performed by making Snake stand against the door at a certain angle and aim his gun at a guard. When Snake is shot by the guard, he moves back a little, and by standing in his position, Snake's hitbox can reach the trigger on the other side of the door that loads the next area. Speaking to fellow Yogg's cast member, Pedgwin,
let me
after
in.
The incident, Bulba explained that speedrunners have now figured out how to replicate the glitch consistently, making it a reliable way to drastically improve previous speedrun times and making it inevitable that the existing MGS speedrun leaderboards will soon be demolished. Kevin, you can bring up the video. Go ahead and press play on it. You can probably skip around like halfway through.
Yeah, I had it going.
Oh, you had it going? Okay. Yeah,
it's right at the start. See, she goes right.
Yeah, she's right there. She's at that door. She's at the infamous stairwell.
And kind of in the style of the game. That's cool.
Yeah, right? Isn't that awesome? Cool. It's super cool, too, like the fact that she's playing through it for the first time and she discovered this thing that speedrunners are going to go crazy for, right? And that's going to like lead to the speedrun record being broken. That's such a cool thing.
I'm not gonna get too judgy about this because you know me, I'm very big on like don't yuck other people's yums. If you like to put pineapple on your pizza, I'm gonna mind my own business. I wouldn't put pineapple on my pizza, but I'm not gonna give you shit for putting pineapple on your pizza. You should, it's your pizza, do whatever you want with it. It's your video game, play it however you want to play it. I'll just say I've personally never understood the appeal of speedrunning. It's an interesting way to play through a game. It's an interesting challenge to set for yourself. How quickly can you play through a game, right? But when you get to the point of like, how quickly can I play through a game by playing as little of it as possible and finding glitches that enable me to skip huge chunks of it? I don't know. I'm kind of a stop and smell the roses kind of guy. I want to enjoy the game. Like just
it's the metagame, Gary.
I guess. But it's kind of like, it's kind of like saying like, oh, how quickly can you jerk off? Or like, how quickly can you fuck? Like you're kind of missing the point. If you like, if it's like, oh, I can climax in 30 seconds, I wouldn't be fucking bragging about that. Like you're supposed to like enjoy it. Like fuck, you want that shit to last.
Yeah, if every now and then you're not trying, like, okay, how fast can I get this thing out? Like you're not living, Gary. Let me tell you, just try it at least once. It'll change your life.
I mean, if you're in like a real fucking hurry. I get it, but like when I've never found myself in that particular situation.
Now, like, I mean, maybe have you not done like create your own challenges in games like in Mario Kart?
Oh, I thought you were gonna say create your own challenge in jerking off. I'm so glad.
Well, okay, I mean, that too. That applies, but that's a different podcast. I mean, like how like people will play Mario Kart and there's the game Don't Drink and Drive where people have to drink a beer and also finish. A race Mario Kart, but you can't do both at the same time. Like if you want to drink your beer, you have to
right.
put down.
Yeah, I think crazy shit like that can be.
Like
can
I
be
seen
fun.
On the same level of like I'm creating my own.
Once you've played Metal Gear Solid through like the regular way and experienced all the content, sure, why not set crazy challenges for yourself? Like just like how quickly can I get to the end point in the game and finish it, even if it means finding glitches and stuff like that. And listen. Mario, this is as old as Mario, like warp zones and shit. Like you're just skipping over massive chunks of content just so you can get to the end. But yeah, for me, like beating a game by playing as little of it as possible, that doesn't appeal to me. But again, speedrunning is huge. I get it. I'm an old man shaking my fist at a cloud again. I totally understand that. It's not for me. But again, for people that enjoy speedrunning and enjoy watching speedrunning, more power to you.
Gary, I can't wait for you to one day experience the joy of just trying to jerk off as fast as possible. But
I can't. Okay, so here's the let's imagine you were really like horny and pent up, right? And you're about to get on a like a flight to Australia. It's like fuck. If I don't do it now, I'm gonna be like uncomfortable and all pent up like the whole fucking flight. My flight's in five minutes. It's now
stop,
or
guys.
Never.
I'm
in the contrived, really fucked up situations to think like when you would want to like do it as quickly as possible.
How many years have you been on this earth, Gary? You gotta find ways to spice things up.
Guys, let's just walk away. Like there's no reason to be here.
Gary, if I would
make you uncomfortable, Kevin.
I mean, it's just, it's not good content. No one wants to know this.
I disagree. I think this is some of the best content you've had on Kind of Funny in a long
time.
Views
have dropped significantly since we started this conversation.
I mean, really? Because it looks like we have 20 more viewers than we had a few minutes ago. If I want to know what's coming out to Mom and Grab Shops today, where would I look?
The official list of upcoming software on each and every platform, as listed by the Kind of Funny Games Daily show hosts each and every weekday.
Do 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 yeah
yeah.
Out. today we got Pile Up Box by Box for PS4, Xbox One, and Switch. Greek Memories of Azure for PS5, PS4, Xbox Series X/S, Xbox One, Switch, and PC. Humankind for PC. Space Invaders Invincible Collection for Switch. Conquest of Elysium 5 for PC and Mac. And then Parasite is out now on Steam. New dates for you: Strategic Fantasy Battler Guardians of Hylor Storms PC on September 29th. I think the actual game itself is called Guardians of Hylor. All the other stuff was just fancy writing that the marketers put in there. Then Ratchet and Clank Bundle is coming to Rocket League on PS5 for free on August 18th. And then also coming to the PS5 version on the same day is a quality mode that'll give you 4K at 60 FPS and a performance mode that'll give you 120 FPS with 70% of 4K. I didn't even know that was a thing. Holy shit. And then deal of the day for you, coming soon to Game Pass. Today you're getting Humankind, NFS Heat, Star Wars Battlefront 2, and then Jedi Fallen Order. On August 19th, you're getting Recompile, Train Sim World 2, and then 12 Minutes. On August 25th, you're getting Psychonauts 2, and on August 26th, you're getting Myst. And then Gary, Witta, Kevin, Coelho, yes. It's time. The reason why this episode is so special is one of them rotating segments. We got a write-in from the one, the only, Kenny Ballou. He writes in to say, today, Tuesday, August 17th, 2021, is the 1,000th episode of Kinda Funny Games Daily.
Somebody predicted that, right? One of us Kevin said that earlier.
Kevin nailed it, but he looked ahead in the doc. You know,
I did not. I did not.
Oh, did you cheat, Kevin?
I did not look ahead in the doc. I have no qualms being like, I'm going to look ahead in the doc. But, like, it was just, we don't celebrate a lot of things, and we hit 900 probably 3 months ago.
Episode. No, but that's a real milestone. I agree. That's impressive. Yeah.
Kenny Ballou here has a long write-up that I'm going to read through. I'm going to try and parse down some. Of course, I believe he posted over on the Kinda Funny Reddit, and so you can go over there if you want to check out the full details. But his post reads like this. As I did for the previous 100 episode milestones, I put together some stats and fun facts about the show. Feel free to pare down, and then I'll just post the full rundown on Reddit like usual. There have been a total of 121 hosts of the show. For the regulars, the rankings are as follows. At number one, it's Greg with 634 shows. That is up 45 shows since 900. At number two, you got Tim with 340 shows. That's up 44 shows. At three, it's me, Blessing, at 251 shows. That's up 55 shows. At number four, Andrea, RIP, at 173 shows. Number five, Gary, at 151 shows. That's up 16 shows.
Ooh, so that means I'll overtake Andrea pretty soon because she doesn't do it anymore.
Yeah, by the time we get to 1,100, you're going to be number four, likely. Yeah.
Yeah.
And number six, we got Imran, RIP, at 99 shows. Number seven, we got Jared, RIP, at 65 shows. Number eight, Fran, with 59. Number nine, Andy, at 28. And then at number 10, we got Danny at 24. And then at number 11, we got Janet Garcia at 13.
So who was above me that's not Andrea? Because I'll overtake Andrea, but then who's the next one I got to knock off?
It's Greg, Tim, and me. And so...
Oh, I'll just... Yeah. Come on.
You're the number one, part-time host.
I'm the number one adopted outsider, whatever you want to call it. Oh,
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly, contract.
That record is in sight. Look at Andrea, I'm coming for you.
Hell yeah. For the guests, Paris Lilly, Khalif Adams, and Tamor Hussein have hosted five episodes each. Anthony Gallegos, Chastity Vicencio, Cheeks Jr., Belinda Garcia, Mike Mahardy, Alana Pierce, Austin Creed, and Steve Saylor have all hosted three times.
Okay.
Anthony Carboni, Christian Phillips, Brittany Brombacher, Kat Bailey, Aiden Strahlhoon, David Yagno, Nathan Brandt, Odell Harmon Jr., Bruce Green, Victor Lucas, Gabe Patillo, Ben Hansen, Laura Kate Dale, Jason Schreier, Damon Hatfield, and Lucy James have all hosted twice, and then 79 other guests have hosted once. Now it's time for hosting combos. Number one is Greg and Tim with 146 shows total. That's up 10 since the last 100. Number two, Greg and Andrea with 121 shows total. And number three, Greg and Gary with 105 shows total.
Oh, I'm coming for that record as well.
Dude, you're going to be number two soon with Greg and you. And number four, it's Tim and me with 82 shows total. That's the largest jump since episode 900 with plus 26 shows. And number five, it's Greg and me at 72. Number six, me and Imran, 43. And number seven, Greg and Sherrod at 29. And number eight, Greg and Imran, 24. Number nine, Andrea and Tim at 23. And then number 10 is Greg and Danny at 20 shows. And it goes up to 20, but you can find that on the Reddit.
Did I miss how many you and I have done?
You and I have done 11 shows total.
Oh,
not nearly
good.
Enough. Not nearly enough, though.
No, I agree. Many more to come, I hope.
There have been four KFGD shows that were more than two-person hosts. The first two were three-host shows where Greg, Andrea, and Victor Lucas, then Greg, Andrea, and Tim hosted on May 18th, 2018. There was a five-person host show on July 23rd, 2020, when Greg, Tim, Blessing, Andy, and Snowbike Mike all joined together to host after the Xbox Showcase. The latest was a three-host show with Greg, Andy, and Snowbike Mike on June 10th, 2021. The show is run by one of the hosts who reads the Roper Report, segment transitions, etc. The ranking for this is as follows. Number one is Greg with 610 shows. Number two is me, Blessing, at 193 shows. And number three is Tim with 81 shows. Number four, Andrea. Number five, Imran. And that's followed by Jared, Fran, Janet Garcia, Snowmike Mike. And then at number 10 is Nick, Paris, Danny, Chastity, and Cheeks, all tied at one show each.
Mm-hmm.
For some advanced metrics, the rankings for the percentage of shows run to shows hosted. Actually, I'm going to skip that one because that is very granular. But thank you for that. Rankings for who has done the sound effects for the shows. Kevin is leading at 698 shows. Number two is Barrett with 180 shows. Number three is Cool Greg at 91. Number four is Andy at 16. And then at number five is Joey at 12 shows.
Holy shit.
Kenny Blue introduces a new stat as requested by StrikeBurstAZ on the Kinda Funny subreddit after episode 600, but it took him a while to actually get this together. There have been a total of 4,733.1 items on the Roper Report.
What?
4,733.1 items on the Roper Report. And Kenny Blue adds, don't ask how he got the .1 on the end. Some interesting tidbits. Greg has run the show 610 times, but has only announced the number of items on the Roper Report 606 times. He forgot to say how many four times. The first show on June 19th, 2017. The third show on June 21st, 2017. And then also on the same year, June 26th, and then finally on November 6th, 2017. Greg has had a total of 2,778.6 items total. I've had a total of 1,024.5 items total. Tim has had 408. Imran has hosted 138.5. And then Jared has hosted 135 items on the Roper Report. The list goes on, but again, find that on the subreddit. For average items on the Roper Report, Jared has the highest average with an average of 5.9 items per show. Janet has an average of 5.8 items. I have an average of 5.3 items. Tim has an average of 5 items. Imran, 4.8. Fran, 4.6. And then Greg has an average of 4.6 average items on the Roper Report. Jared leads the most items on the Roper Report with 13 in one show. That's the only actual baker's dozen. Tim's most items are number 10 on a show. I've been number 9, tied with Greg also at number 9, and then Janet at number 5 has 7 items on the Roper Report for the most. Let's see here. I'm going to scroll through because there is so much here. Oh, actually, I'm going to read
more?
Kenny Blue went in depth with this.
I can only imagine, like, how much time must this have taken to compile all this data?
Kenny Blue is a dedicated Kinda Funny best friend.
Dedicated?
For that.
Committed.
Absolutely. Well,
fucking should be committed.
Kenny Blue writes this, or continues with this, I should say. Incredibly, there have been a total of 353 shows since the last show in the studio, sad face. That means over 35% of all the Kinda Funny Games Daily episodes have not been done in the studio. This stat amazes me the most to keep updating. Since the Patreon post shows were added in January 2020, there have been a total of only 14 shows of the 403 total shows without a post show. There was even one infamous post show where the only thing recorded was Barrett's voice. It was a thrilling post show, lol. We love you for that, Barrett. A couple of cool logos have been introduced lately on the show. July 22nd, 2021 introduced the Tim/Tam logo. August 9th, 2021 introduced the Garcia/Geddes information squad. And then August 10th, 2021 introduced the Witta Tuesday logo.
Nice.
On the March 29th, 2021 show, Greg's blinds from his window fell to the floor with a crash. The April Fool's Day episode of 2021 was one to remember, with segment changes from Roper Report to Cortez Minute, along with two special #KFGD top 5 lists. I see what's going on there. Two special KFGD top 5 lists. It's Andy's top 5 animals and Andy's top 5 celebrities in video games. On May 26, 2021, Blessing announces there are 7 items on the Roper Report. Tim interjects to add an 8th. It's Kevin's birthday. On June 10th, Greg was broadcasting from LA in his hotel room due to E3. Little did he know that Andy also decided to have a remote broadcast from LA as well, reporting live from the streets of E3. On June 30th, Greg announces that he's going to send cake to Tim and Blessings to celebrate their birthdays. 2 days later, while enjoying said cake, Blessing decides to criticize Greg for not making his cheesecake. In maybe the most improbable move of all time, on July 9th, there were two instances of the Roper Report jingle by Kevin. Guest host Patrick Shanley had requested a second one. On July 15th, another first for KFGD, the first time there was ever a pre-show instead of a post-show. On July 23rd, Kevin's mic was muted for the audience for the Roper Report, so there was no jingle broadcasted for the Roper Report or the Baker's Dozen. On July 30th, the guys attempted to permanently blind themselves by increasing their ambient lighting levels all the way up to 100%. While the future of the dress code for the show was discussed on Friday, August 13th, will there be casual Fridays? Will there be formal Fridays? Greg has now dressed down for 260 of his 634 show appearances, not including Christmas sweaters or Ghostbusters costumes/outfits. He has only dressed up once during the pandemic work from home shows. Congratulations on making it to 1,000 episodes. It seems like just yesterday you guys introduced the show and I started making this simple spreadsheet to track who was on the show. I believe it's grown into a tentpole show for you guys, and my spreadsheet is obnoxiously huge and laggy now. LOL. I can't imagine. Holy shit, your PC is probably just hanging in there, barely. Thank you very much for all the hard work you put into the show every day. As I've said before, for someone with a desk job like me, this is the perfect show to keep me entertained. Here's to the next 1,000 episodes. Heart emoji, Kenny Ballou. Kenny Ballou, thank you so much
for
that
write-up. How does this guy have time for a full-time job and this? Like, I feel like compiling these stats would be a full-time job. I mean, like, I can't even... I would love to talk to this guy about what went into the research to compile all that data. It's remarkable.
We have to reach out to Kenny Ballou sometime to actually talk to him, because yeah, it is incredible the work that he puts into the spreadsheet. And that is with me not even reading the entire thing. There are still stats in there that I didn't get to because we will be here all day. So now, shout out and thank you to Kenny Ballou.
Absolutely remarkable work, and not at all concerning. Now here's the thing. That was a really, really impressive quantitative analysis of the history of Kinda Funny Games Daily. What I would like to see as a follow-up would be a qualitative analysis. For example, top 50 all-time greatest Kinda Funny Games Daily show moments. I would dominate in that analysis.
You would, Gary. You would, because you have a good dynamic as a KFGD co-host, because you bring the hot takes, you bring the bits, you bring what everybody loves to KFGD. I would argue that me and Imran have had plenty of great moments, especially with our chicken sandwich rankings. You know, I think we'd be up there. You know, Tim doesn't bring much to this show. I'm sure Greg would have a few moments here and there. But I would love the qualitative.
Tim doesn't bring much to the show. Is this the start of like a Blessing Tim beef? Because I'm here for it.
No, I could never do that. No, of course, me and Tim have the Bless Tim dynamic. You know, we can't have that happen, because then Mondays would be awkward, right? If we had beef, we can't do that. But for now, Gary, we're far into the show. We need to transition to kindoffunny.com/you're wrong, which is where you write in, let us know what we got wrong as we got it wrong, so we can correct it for those watching later on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames and on podcast services around the globe. Charles Jacobson writes in to say, Outriders was always online, so you couldn't play it during the server issues. Thank you for that. DJ Starburst writes in to say, Gartenberg's name is pronounced like Chaim. It's Chaim Gartenberg from The Verge. Thank you for that.
Okay.
Let's see. Nanobiologist mentions that we heard Kevin during the ad read. Maybe we may need to redo it.
Oh, thanks, wait, they info. Heard. They, I think they heard all of us.
Oh, wow.
I muted everyone. I muted you guys.
Oh. Then,
but I didn't mute myself. I already have notes. Cool Guy's going to cut that all out. Everyone in Twitch, enjoy it. Enjoy. Oh, yeah. You,
that's a shame, because I was dissing Kevin pretty good during the ad read. I was kind of hoping that people would hear that.
Yeah, yeah. You were like, oh, captain that ship. Gary, when you're captaining a ship, you're going to expect some deaths, okay? That's why they have burials at sea. You know what I mean?
You're not making a great case for me to be a crewmate on the SS Kevin.
Every captain loses, you know, a seaman or two.
Yeah, the question is, how quickly can you lose that semen?
How quickly do the semens get lost?
Not all right, guys. Plus, come on.
One more you're wrong comes from Nanobiologist, who says, Gary just mentioned PS5 can do 8K. Xbox Series X's box also advertises 8K HDR. So that's a you're wrong for Gary.
Plenty of bullshit to go around. Come on, 8K. Give me a fucking break.
The rest of this week's hosts for Kinda Funny Games Daily are, tomorrow, you're getting Janet, and Andy. I know we keep saying Janet's going to be on shows this week, but Greg keeps not following up with Janet to ask if she's free, which is why she wasn't on today. But I think that's the plan right now for tomorrow is Janet and Andy, so look out for that. If you're watching this live right now on Twitch, after this is Mike, Andy, and Nick playing Naraka Blade Point. You can catch that stream later on youtube.com/kindoffunnyplays.
Yeah, I saw Andy Cortez playing some of that on his stream the other day.
I want to try that out because that game looks really fun.
Yeah, it's got like kind of a Ghost of Tsushima, Sekiro kind of vibe to it. Yeah.
But it's a battle royale. Remember, this has been Kind of Funny Games Daily. Each and every weekday.
Is it cool?
I mean, it's a cool idea. Samurai battle royale.
I mean, that's why I'm playing
it. We could talk about it in the post show, guys.
All right.
Oh, we have a post show? I haven't read your Slack, Barrett, but yeah, it sounded like you were like, yo, we might be going long for a post show. Actually, let's call it now. Barrett, should we have a post show or no? What are your thoughts as a producer?
I slacked you that to me because I know the Jabroni boys have been waiting for a while because y'all went way over. So,
those poor Jabronis.
They got the games working and stuff. They needed the time to.
You know what,
though?
This has been a good show. When you're on a roll, when you're providing premium content, you don't cut bait. Mm-hmm. You got to keep going.
You got to keep going. You can't cut.
You got to go where the premium content takes
you. And that's why the post show exists, you know?
Yeah, we're gonna have let's have a shorter post show because we've given the people so much, but we'll still have a post show.
Just
so
do your job, you know what I mean? Get that post show out. I don't want a 15 on the marker.
Each and every weekday live right here at twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. We run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. We have a Patreon post show for those that are subbed at the silver level of patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. So stick around for that. Otherwise, until next time, Game Daily.